because he's rico.
Sorry?
He's rico.
Sorry, I couldn't understand it.
It's because he's rico.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
Only Ian Bilton this week.
Just me.
Yeah, just it's usually you. Well, it has been recently who's been missing. But I mean, I suppose you have had reasons, because you had your 50th birthday recently, didn't you?
I did, and I didn't do anything for it because it's just another year. Apart from going to Hamburg and have a jolly good time.
Yes, you did go to Hamburg and have a jolly good time, didn't you? And of course, you had a nice celebration at your house that I went to, and I had a jolly good time there as well.
You did. We watched an excellent game of football, didn't we?
Oh, we certainly did. We certainly did. Well, we watched Arsenal beat West Ham. I certainly enjoyed that. I'm not sure the West Ham supporter who was with us really enjoyed it.
No, he didn't, which actually made it even better. You know who you are.
Yes, good time. Unfortunately, yes, Terry's not here, but he will be back next week. And next week is going to be a special episode because it's our last of the year. And you know what the last episode of the year means, don't you, Jan? What does that mean?
It means it's our extra special advent calendar episode.
Where we open up 24 doors, because that's what we do. We do our advent calendar a bit different. If you're new to the Sound of Football, it's our annual present to you. It's what we do is we open up 24 doors, and behind each of those doors are 24 different subjects. And we talk about them. We talk about what's going to be big in 2025. And personally, I can't wait. I can't wait to open up the doors and find all the same things that were there last year.
Yeah, it's alongside. In fact, I probably enjoy it a little bit more than the fake draws.
Yeah.
I mean, the fake draws are incredible. They're a joy to be part of. But the advent calendar is extra special. Especially when we have a guest. I don't know, are we going to have guests this year, Graham?
I think we are. We didn't last year. Oh. We didn't last year because of reasons, but we scaled it back a bit last year. But I think I'm ready for it again now. I think I'm ready to bring a few guests in and get some more opinions in. And yeah, we love getting our friends to come in and talk about what's going to go on in the next year or so. Because a lot of the time they know a bit more than we do about certain subjects. You wouldn't believe it, would you, listeners? The way we go on about everything about football. We never shy away from any subject, do we, Jan?
Never. Yeah, it'll be good to get some real experts on rather than us who... Well, I wouldn't say we're not experts, but, you know.
Yeah.
We're opinion heads, aren't we?
We are. The thing is that the advent calendar is all about what we think is going to happen in the new year. And of course, you know, that's just like sticking your finger in the air and just speculating and going on our wealth of experience of watching football for years and years and years and thinking, well, this is the way it's happened every other time that these omens have shown up. So I personally can't wait. But who will be behind the doors? We don't know. Well, we do know because I write a list. But we don't know where the conversation is going to go. I've just put names down there. Who knows where the conversation goes? I wonder, will Man City be behind one of those doors, I wonder? I would think so. Man United definitely will, won't they?
Well, I mean, they've been a regular feature since... Well, since Alex Ferguson left, really. But yes, they're both going to be probably for very different reasons.
Yeah, Jan does have a point there. We have been doing the advent calendar since Alex Ferguson was in post at Man United. So that's how far back it goes. Well, obviously, we've been doing the podcast even, Terry and I at least anyway, right back to when City were taken over by the Abu Dhabi group. So that's how long we've been on this journey anyway. And the contents of the advent calendar reflect that going through the years. And yeah, I can't wait to see where we go this year. But of course, we've got another week to go before we do our advent calendar. So we've got to come out with a regular podcast. And this week, we're going to be talking about those Manchester clubs because they had a bit of a weekend, didn't they, Jan?
They certainly did. I mean, they're having a bit of a season, if I'm going to be honest with you. But City, who are going through a bit of a blip at the moment, had a good win in midweek against a very good Nottingham Forest side. So an excellent win for them. And I thought that would be it. But they went to Palace. And as Terry said a few weeks ago, didn't he? We're playing them in a few weeks and the players will be thinking, you know, we can have a crack at these guys. And they did. A good result, I think, no matter which way you look at it for Palace. And maybe they were a bit unlucky. But City went there, could only manage a draw and even had a player sent off. Enrico Lewis.
First player they've had sent off in over a year, I think that is. The last player that got sent off for them was Akanji, and I think that was deep into injury time in a win against Brighton. That was October 23. So it's not as if they suffer going down to 10 men that often, and maybe that's just another symptom of the situation that they're finding themselves in. I did say to Terry last week that Palace were a little bit of a bogey team for them, and he wasn't having it, really. He wasn't having it, but 2-2, and they led twice in that game. So the good result they got against Forest City, that is, didn't seem to last too long, hasn't really broken them out for fuck, but they have got a lot of injuries, haven't they, at the moment. And it seems to be a proper crisis of injuries, doesn't it?
Well, some people would say the catalyst that was the cause of all this was Rodri's injury, but one person doesn't make a team collapse.
No.
Well, it is possible, but it's unlikely with a team as strong as City. But they are missing Kovacic, they're missing John Stones, they're missing Phil Foden. So that's even Oscar Bob, who I think is a fantastic player as well, is not around. So, you know, that's a lot of players to be missing when you're entering a difficult period. They'll come out of this eventually, but just thinking that, you know, around Christmas time, there's a few games there, there's a lot of chances for them to break the back of this and get back to winning ways. But isn't the new year when the verdict on their hearing comes out?
Well, supposedly. This is what we've been told, but I don't think there's any firm dates on this at all. Because I think, as far as anything, this hearing was meant to be finished. And we don't know whether it has or not, or what sort of stages they're at.
Mm.
Obviously, everything is behind closed doors. Everything is being nailed down. And it's being nailed down really well, because we'd be hearing stuff all the way through, wouldn't we?
Mm.
But I think it's very, very important for the Premier League, at least, for anything not to come out. That's what I think. I think the only stuff you've heard coming out has been really from City, when there's obviously been something that they feel that they need a little bit of backup from their huge support to help them through. So I don't think we're going to be hearing anything. This could be just picking out a date from midair, but I don't think we're going to hear anything until February.
Mm.
But I don't think you're going to be hearing anything about any punishment probably until the end of the season. And then you've got the appeals. Now, I think they will be able to punish them before the appeals are made. But we've spoken about it before on the podcast about it's really important that the Premier League has got to be able to keep the whole of the competition from becoming just a circus. So it can't just sit there and throw the book and say, look, Man City did something wrong here. Look, let's strip all their titles. Let's get rid of it, because it just makes a joke of everything, doesn't it? So I think it's treading really carefully. It's probably going to make it so that City, or they will appeal, but what they will be appealing against is going to be perhaps something a little less than having all their titles stripped. Or it may be a decision that they have to make, where they say, look, do you really want to go ahead with this, or do you want to just take the punishment? Because this is going to last forever and be hanging over you.
Mm.
I really don't think we're going to hear any sort of judgments being meted out until next summer.
Yeah. I was just wondering whether that coming out might coincide with, well, it's clearly going to affect what happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
Even if it happened in, I don't know, March, and they had to play out the rest of the season knowing that they were going to be, for example, in League One the next season, it's going to affect what's happening there, isn't it? But you are right, though, about the Premier League. They've done, just in terms of keeping this under wraps, they've done really, really well, haven't they? Because there's been no leaks. There's been nothing in the press whatsoever that anyone's been having conversations with officials close to the process. There's just nothing. It's an absolute code of silence, which is kind of the way it is exactly the way it should be.
Yeah.
So you may be evil capitalist Premier League, but you're doing this rather well. You're winning a few friends here. It's interesting when you were saying, Graham, because I was thinking that Rico Lewis was the first person to be sent off in a little while. I was surprised when you gave us the actual facts that it had been so long. But it does seem that they're not used to this level of lack of form or disappointment, because to have someone as cool and collected as Pep Guardiola holding up six fingers to the Liverpool fans to remind them how many titles he'd won. And I did think that he was doing that with a bit of good grace, because there was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek irony from the Liverpool fans there, wasn't there?
Yeah. With,
you know, you're getting sacked in the morning. So I think there was a lot more made of that than there really was. But that did then roll into a spat with Mourinho, didn't it? Where Mourinho said, I won three titles, but I won them fair and square, which was funny, but it was funny on two levels. One for the obvious one, but the other one is that he won that in the Abramovich era. So you might want to keep that one quiet, Jose, because I don't think that's as squeaky clean as you think it was. But nonetheless, for Pep to even engage in that is, in either of those two things, is just not his usual thing, is it? So for him to be rattled, I saw something on social media as well of him clashing with a fan who made a comment about him losing at Liverpool, which again is not the type of thing that you would see either. So you've got, you know, just to go back to how well the Premier League are behaving, but you're right, City, in terms of their lawyers and their officials, aren't behaving very well, but their players and their manager aren't. So I wonder whether they've got an inkling of what's going on here, and maybe that is affecting them. Because, it, like we said, Rodri getting injured shouldn't be causing all this. Something has happened. A drop in form, you know, happens to clubs, even to the best clubs. But, I mean, this is quite dramatic for a team and for a club like City, isn't it? So I'm wondering whether there's more to it than meets the eye.
Yeah, you look at that red card they pick up, and they never pick up red cards. Very, very rarely do they pick up red cards. But this is the sort of symptom of what happens to a club when the pressure is on. And you can see the way they were playing against Palace, they were ragged. And that's what they've been like for the last few games. There's no organisation in midfield. And so you are going to give away cheap free kicks, you are going to give away fouls, and you are going to pick up yellow cards as well. Rico Lewis, you can look at the second challenge in slow motion. The first yellow card, tellingly, was for dissent. The second one, yeah, you can say, well, his foot goes underneath the opposition player, but he's not really in control of that challenge. It's an easy yellow card. You can complain about it, but you'd pretty much be wrong. These are the sort of things that happen, aren't they, when you're in a club that is feeling the pressure. Whether that is just the weight of all these injuries, and quite frankly, yeah, they do have millions and millions of pounds worth of talent on the bench. This is one of the things that I always used to say about the problem of Arsenal trying to compete with City, is that their best players generally only play for about two-thirds of the time that Arsenal players have to play, because they have to be on the pitch all the time. You saw with Arsenal, their poor patch this season was when Odegaard was missing. And without him, Arsenal really have no imagination. They're relying very, very heavily on set pieces as it is at the moment. But I think that's obviously something that happens when a team is in really, really good form. Teams will have to analyse them and put pressure on them. Fulham this weekend got a point off Arsenal, and this will happen throughout the whole season. But I think what's happening with City now is quite remarkable. But this week they're playing Juve in the Champions League. Now they've got 8 points in the big table, the big Swiss model table. That will probably be enough to carry them through to the next round. But you'd like to think that another win would be great for them out of the last three games. I think City and Juventus, because Juventus are also on 8 points, they really want to have one more win just to make things a bit more comfortable for themselves. And of course, they're playing each other in the Club World Cup next year, aren't they? In the draw, they came out in the same group together.
Well, I bet City are looking forward to that now, with all the headaches they've got to deal with at the moment. They're probably looking forward to as much, Graham, as you and I are.
Yeah. But, of course, the big game for them this weekend is against United. So it's the Manchester derby at the Etihad. I suppose, really, if you really want to have a turn in form, this is the time to have it, isn't it, really?
It's a time to have to do it, though, with Juventus and then Manchester United. Yeah, so they've got the benefit of home advantage, but that's a huge game. You know, the atmosphere is going to be immense. It's going to be Amorim's first taste of a Manchester derby. I think Manchester United are going to feel that they can have a go at City. I mean, United, don't get me wrong, I mean, they're not in the best form. I mean, Amorim, you know, he's very early in his tenure. And of course, they had a disappointing result at the weekend. They lost to Arsenal before that. But it's going to take him a while to put his stamp on that, if he ever does. But so anyway, I think it's going to be a good game, but I think City will be the more wary of the two sides going into that. Do you agree?
It's difficult to tell, isn't it? Because I think at the moment, Terry did say in the box set that the honeymoon was over for Amorim after losing to Arsenal. But I think he's still got another few games to be able to get away with that. I think if they lose badly to City, if City do what they did to Forest last week, which they could do. I mean, in this run of bad games that they've had, this run of the last nine games, they've only won one game. I think they've only had three home games out of that lot. They had the big draw against Feyenoord, which was like a defeat because they were 3-0 up in that game.
Mm.
And then they scored three against Forest as well, but they also had that big defeat to Tottenham. So they do have a big defeat in them at the Etihad. And I think with United is that there is a bit of chaos still about United. And I think they've got good players and they've got players that can score. It's just you cannot predict what is going to happen this weekend in the Manchester Derby, which is great because over the last few years, it's been entirely predictable what's going to be happening in the Manchester Derby. But we saw with the Cup Final that even when you think it's nailed on, it's not.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting thing about fixtures like this. I was going to, or was about to say this particular fixture, but of course there are huge fixtures that happen, you know, all across the season that throw up this kind of thing. I suppose if you want to knock Manchester United out of the equation, one big thing you can do is just wind up Bruno Fernandes, because one, it's incredibly easy to do. And two, you've got a massively gifted player that just becomes completely ineffective. In fact, it's better to have him on the pitch being ineffective if you're the opposition because of just the problems he causes. So if City can find the discipline and not go down the mad route, which they haven't really got in them, the sending off of the weekend, as you said, was probably say that's a one-off. And going into this one, they'll be as professional as they always have been in their approach. But yeah, it's a tale of one City and two mad halves of a City, because, you know, we've talked at length there about City's crazy situation that they're going through and that they've been going through for a while because of the investigation and so on. But Manchester United, they are past masters at this. They've been going through this for years.
Well, yeah, they are the perennial chaos club, aren't they, at the moment? And it's easy to get lost in the narrative of whenever they make a change that's going to be the magic thing. That's whether it's like when they buy a new player, whether they get a sporting director, whether they get a new part owner. Finally, everything is sorted out. And of course, you know, you only have to wait a couple of months and then you suddenly realize, oh no, it's really not sorted out at all. And Dan Ashworth became the latest victim of this.
Mm.
The man that they courted for so long, that they lured away from St. James's Park. A man who's done pretty well everywhere he's gone, and then all of a sudden he arrives at Old Trafford, and within 5 months of his official start date, he's now walking out with a cardboard box by mutual consent. I was shocked by it, but were you shocked by it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's 5 months and it was a really high profile move, wasn't it? I mean, as we were saying a few weeks ago, sporting directors moving around are becoming as big news as coaches moving around. But they spent, I think they gave Newcastle £2 or 3 million as a transfer fee.
Yeah.
That seems a bit strange that Radcliffe and Ineos had come in to bring stability where there'd been chaos under the Glazers, or perceived chaos under the Glazers. And I haven't seen any calming of the waters under the Ineos watch. They've made a lot of people redundant at the club, real people with real mortgages and rent to pay. And they've spent £2 million, let's say, at the low end, bringing in Ashworth. And apparently, there's a lot of stories circulating around. Is it going to happen when something like this hits the press? But, you know, there's stories that he wasn't involved in a lot of key decisions. He was frozen out or ignored. But he didn't help himself when he went public and said that he had nothing to do with keeping Ten Hag on. I don't know whether there was a relationship breakdown there or not. But it seems to me that Jim Ratcliffe seems a quite a capricious kind of man. And I may have got him wrong, and he's a lovely man, and you know, he's looks after homeless puppies and things like that. But, you know, he does run a chemical company, so maybe not. But anyway, you know, he's come in and, you know, there's no working from home. I'm going to make you all redundant. Let's bring this guy in. Let's get rid of him. Let's keep Ten Hag. Let's get rid of him. They're not the actions of a stable regime. And I do genuinely feel sorry for Ruben Amorim, because I think that his stock still is very, very high, massively high when he was at Sporting. And I said at the time, I was in Portugal when he was appointed, and I was speaking to a local there, and they were just like, that's another great coach whose career's just gone down the pan when he moves to England, which is, I hope isn't the case, but I do feel sorry for him jumping in there. And you are right in what you said. They do expect to make a change in manager, even in play. Do you remember they brought in Ronaldo?
Yeah.
They brought back Ronaldo. It's all changed. Ten Hag comes in, doesn't like Ronaldo. Ronaldo goes. Ten Hag stays. Ten Hag goes. Let's bring in Amorim. He's the most exciting and the most sought-after coach in the world, which he is, which he was. But it almost feels like they're papering over the cracks. These, although they're big, significant signings they're bringing in, they're superficial, really, when you think about what has happened at United since the Glazers came in, and latterly Ineos.
The whole thing about Amorim as well, and Amorim is a fantastic coach. If you need any proof about how good Amorim is, have a look and see what's happened to Sporting after he's gone, because their results have just gone absolutely down the pan. They were 100% in the league while he was still with them. They've lost their last two games. And this isn't against like Benfica or Porto. These were against Moreirense and Santa Clara, who are teams who are near the top of the Portugal league. But no, these were not games they were losing while Amorim was there. And Sporting were absolutely torn apart by Arsenal, having previously put City to the sword.
Yeah.
A month later, they were getting absolutely humped at home by Arsenal. So that's the measure of him. And he looks broken already on the touchline. He already looks like a David Squires cartoon. He is absolutely wrecked. And this is what the club is doing to him. United are the sick man of the Premier League, aren't they? But their influence just affects everyone who touches them at the moment. It's even more insidious than being Spursy, isn't it?
Well, it's funny you said that. I mean, it's Manchester United must look at Spurs with envy. Just go, what a well-run, consistent club that doesn't do anything mad whatsoever. Because Manchester United have out-Spursed Spurs on the Spursy sticks, haven't they?
Yeah. Do we have to come up with United-y now? Is that the new term for describing a bit of chaos? Is that the way we should be talking about United? I mean, with Spursy has just become just this thing that everyone just says. But I think we need United-y now, because I think that really describes what is going on there. They lost again, and they fired their sporting director. The compensation check that they gave to Newcastle probably, it hasn't even expired yet.
Yeah, Newcastle probably haven't even got round to putting it in the bank.
They probably had to pay, I don't know, because this whole thing about mutual consent, have they really made his position like impossible or something like that? Or are they paying him off for the rest of his contract as well, which is laughable? I wonder if they'll make him work his gardening leave like Newcastle did, so he doesn't rock up back at St. James's Park next week.
You know, he's probably still got some of his stuff there. It's funny, when just to cover off the Spurs similarity, there's a great term that you coined last season about Spurs. You talked about being a bin fire.
Yeah.
Now, if Spurs were a bin fire, probably still are a bit of a bin fire, aren't they, Spurs? It never went out. It's still not even smouldering, roaring away. Then Manchester United must be some kind of wild Australian grass fire that's just burning out of control, and there's helicopters dumping loads of fire retardant on it constantly. Yeah, actually, you know, now we've had this conversation, I'm looking forward to watching this game even more. It's going to be crazy.
Well, the good thing is that, of course, it's going to be live, isn't it? It's Super Sunday, so it's going to be the big match on Sunday afternoon, City versus United, and it is going to be in our box set. I think I might reserve the right to write that preview. And what else are we going to be watching this weekend? Well, we've got the Brighton v Palace, and maybe that's why Terry isn't here tonight, because he's bunkering himself in for the big derby between Brighton and Palace. And I bet he won't be writing the preview for that, so I'll probably end up having to do that one as well. You'll be covering Derby versus Pompey, won't you, there?
Yes, I'll be covering that one. You know, on paper, it doesn't look like the most attractive ties. Derby are kind of lower mid-table and Portsmouth a second bottom, but a lot at stake there. Derby are in a terrible run of form, as are Portsmouth, who even got, I mean, they're that bad. They've been beaten by Plymouth recently.
Wow.
Wayne Rooney's Plymouth. Yeah, there's a lot to play for there. If Portsmouth pick up a win, which they probably won't do, but if they do, I mean, they pull themselves right out of there. So there's a lot of changing places that can be happening there. So yeah, that should be quite good.
But if you want to see what we think of the games over the weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. You'll be taken to Substack, where you can sign up, and it will be on your inbox on Friday lunchtime. Now, listeners, you might be thinking, well, it sounds like Graham is just closing up the podcast now, but there still seems to be quite a lot of time left. Well, yeah, you'd be right. There is a lot of time left because I've added something extra onto the end of this podcast. See, normally we have like a little bit after the music and it's just a little Easter egg. It's usually just me and the guys shooting the breeze either before or after we start recording. But instead of an Easter egg this week, you've got a Christmas egg, if there is such a thing as that. What I've done is I've gone through the archive and, well, here's a trailer of what's going to be after the music. Coming this Christmas.
Christmas? Humbug.
The return of some familiar faces.
I am the ghost of Transfer Windows Present.
Fully remastered.
I'm a changed man.
The Sound of Football presents the 2007 production of The Onion Bag Christmas Carol with Terry DeFellin and me, Graham Sibley.
Let's talk business.
But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Jan Belton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Mali was dead.
To begin with.
The crowd stood silent. The players wore black armbands, and they renamed the West Stand. Scrooge was certain, as much as you can be certain about anything in football, that Mali was dead. Mali was never the most popular football chairman. His sound business sense never sat well with the supporters or the many managers that came and went. Scrooge offered a new broom, a burning ambition. Buoyed by unparalleled income from TV and sponsorship, Scrooge promised glory in England and Europe. The board were dazzled, the fans chanted his name, and Scrooge fulfilled his destiny and took his old friend's position as chairman of the club. But despite Scrooge's continual spending and the galaxy of stars that arrived, the closest the club came to glory was Millennium Stadium misery in the Carling Cup. And UEFA Cup humiliation in St. Petersburg. So it was, 7 years to the day after Marley's death, the eve of transfer window day, Scrooge was in his office, pondering his fish. With team manager Bob Cratchit, Scrooge was eager to open the coffers and expand his already bloated squad.
He's got a sweet left foot on him, Mr. Scrooge. Feist I've seen in a long while.
Since the last left winger we paid a fortune for, Mr. Cratchit.
Oh, that was just bad luck, Mr. Scrooge. We weren't know he was into making home movies.
His agent is a friend of yours, is he not, Mr. Cratchit?
Passing acquaintance the best, Mr. Scrooge.
Their frank exchange of views was interrupted by Scrooge's assistant, announcing the arrival of Fred, Scrooge's nephew and up-and-coming representative to some of England's finest footballing talent. He entered carrying a bulging portfolio of top-class players desperate to wear the shirt that hung so proudly on the office wall.
Happy New Year, Uncle Ebenezer. So sorry you couldn't make it for Christmas.
Christmas? Humbug. Let's talk business.
I have got an absolute diamond for you. 26 goals in the Jupiler League, 10 so far this season. 21 years old, born in the Congo, but with a Belgian passport, so no work permit issues. I can have him off the Learjet in 24 hours.
Excellent. What's the damage?
He's going for a song. 18 months left on his contract, but I've had a word with the chairman, and we could get him for as little as 8 million quid.
That sounds like a bargain. How much does he want?
He's not the sharpest tool in the box. He'd settle for just 50 grand a week.
Happy days, Fred. Happy days.
Yeah, we've already got 4 international strikers. I could really use a midfielder.
4 strikers? Only 1 goal between them, and one of them's been lame since he arrived.
No one could predict 2 metatarsal injuries. Tim's just been really unlucky.
I blame the boots, personally. There is nothing wrong with those boots. I broke with that deal myself. The boots are fine.
Fred, make the call. Mr. Cratchit, I want his name on the team sheet for our next game.
As you say, Mr. Scrooge.
Cheers, Uncle. You will not regret this.
Set to their tasks, the two left Scrooge in his office, their seat soon occupied by another 2 gentlemen from the FA.
And what does the FA want this time, gentlemen? I'm a busy man.
Well, Mr. Scrooge, you will no doubt be aware of the condition of our wretched England team.
What of it?
I know that Mr. Marley spoke often of his concern for the young English lads who suffer from appalling training conditions. Why, every day we hear stories of these poor children forced to practice their skills on full-sized outdoor pitches, many of them riddled with fecal matter and broken glass.
The miserable urchins have nowhere to train and no one to train them.
Nonsense. Why, only last year I opened our centre of excellence right here in this very city. I spent £25 million on the best facilities and coaches money can buy.
Indeed, Mr. Scrooge, and a fine academy it is too. A fitting tribute to Marley's commitment to the beautiful game.
Stuff Marley. This is my legacy. When I'm gone, it'll be renamed the Ebenezer Scrooge Soccer Academy. The finest youngsters from all over the globe are queuing up to join.
Quite so, Mr. Scrooge. And it is on that point that we've called. We were hoping to persuade you to allow some promising youngsters from some of your more disadvantaged localities into your academy, so that they can get the chance to play for their local team, and perhaps even for England.
I'll only let English kids in if they'll pay. I'm not a charity.
But surely, Mr. Scrooge, you've offered scholarships in the past.
Of course. For African kids with good strong backs and grateful families desperate to improve their lot in life. But fat-arsed English kids with pushy parents more interested in image rights than teaching little Tommy how to kick a ball straight, they can bloody well pay.
But there's the rub, Mr. Scrooge. They can't.
They have the county FAs, have they not?
They do, Mr. Scrooge, although I wish they were better organised.
The comprehensives and the Sunday leagues are in full vigour, I assume.
Why, yes, Mr. Scrooge, but...
Well, there you are, then. Let the lower leagues take the lower classes. If they survive, I may come home for them later. In the meantime, gentlemen, as I said, I'm a busy man.
Very well, Mr. Scrooge.
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Scrooge.
The unpleasant encounter with the 2 gentlemen had darkened Scrooge's mood, and he resolved to retire to his city centre apartment. Shrugging off the good wishes for the season from his assistant, he left the stadium in his Bentley for the short cross-city journey. Upon entering his plush city pad, Scrooge made himself comfortable in a large leather recliner and switched on the Sky Sports News. Scrooge had not given a second thought to his long-dead predecessor. But there, in place of the face of the comely Georgie Thompson, was none other than Jacob Marley. Staring blankly at him, Scrooge blinked, unsure what his eyes were telling him. And just as soon as it had appeared, it disappeared, reverting to the usual bad lobster in a dark cellar that was Sky Sports' flagship infotainment channel. Scrooge put it behind him, citing the pressures of his position, poured himself another glass of claret, and while the rest of the world celebrated the end of the old year, Scrooge sat alone, excitedly contemplating the frantic days ahead. Self-satisfied and slightly merry for the wine, Scrooge sunk into a slumber, to be woken suddenly by the chimes of Big Ben on his 46-inch flat-screen TV.
He fumbled for the remote and set the TV to standby. Silence fell about the house, but was suddenly broken by the sound of a heavy clanking chain. At first, Scrooge took it as the sound of street revelers, but the unholy clanging was not from without, but from within. And it was approaching. Scrooge stared at where the noise was coming from. A rather ostentatious piece of modern art. He stared aghast. Slowly, the apparition of a man appeared before him. It was unmistakably Marley.
What devilment is this?
Marley just stared blankly back at him.
Marley, is that you?
It was me in life. Now I am nothing more than an image in a knock-off painting. Sold by a charlatan and bought by a fool.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, of course I'm talking to you, Burke.
But what do you want with me?
Much.
Exactly how much?
Stop thinking about money for 5 minutes and just listen. I have come here tonight to warn you. To plead with you to change your ways, lest you become like me.
I'm nothing like you were. Anyway, times have changed.
Not in all things. These chains I carry are the weight of expectation from the thousands of fans who turned up week in, week out during my tenure and were never satisfied.
I'm going to change all that.
But you haven't, and you won't. Your chain was already this length when I died, and now it is much longer and growing.
All very interesting, I'm sure. But what's your point, old man?
Your soul is in peril, Scrooge. You are doomed to walk in purgatory as I do. I offer you a chance to change your path. This night you will be visited by 3 spirits, each to show you the error of your ways and of the undoubted results of your actions. Take heed, Scrooge, for you it is not too late.
And with that, Marley disappeared, leaving Scrooge wondering if that painting really was knocked off.
Well, what's that knocking noise? Oh, sorry, old fella. Didn't mean to alarm you. Just emptying out my pipe. That's better. Oh, by the way, I'm the ghost of Transfer Windows Past. No chance for Satsuma, I suppose. You, pundit. Quit rattling them damn chains. You'll have the neighbours round complaining. These are managed departments, you know. Hang on, where are we going? Back into the past, Ebenezer, to when football was a gentleman's game. Though admittedly played by a large ex-con called Arthur. Yes, Ebenezer. The 50s. Well, that's me. That's my father. It's the first game I ever went to. At the club I now own. I never saw my father. He ran a small shop which sold specialist art. A gentleman enthusiast. At least, that's how he described it to me. Maybe it was a shop for fishermen. Or stamp collectors. Worked all hours, God sent. But I only ever really spent time with him these few times he took me to football. You loved football then, didn't you? The surge of the crowd, the liniment hanging in the air like a pea super. Look, who's that handsome chap over there? Oh, Blackie Henderson. He was a marvellous player. No, behind him. Oh, Tom Chance. Wonderful stopper, Tom Chance. No, no, behind him, about to score. Oh, that's you, isn't it? That was your 5th own goal of the season, wasn't it? Club record. I'm not surprised, it wasn't even September. Where are we going now? Oi, get your hands off my Satsumas. Sorry, they just looked irresistible. Oh, this is the game against Man U, isn't it? It's a great deal, that game. Look, old sport, it's none of my business. But most people remember this game as the one that turned the club around. Look around you! Hooligans in ill-advised hairstyles running at each other across the deserted terraces. A stadium that's seen better days, even in the 3rd division, and a tired bunch of also-rans and ne'er-do-wells in the team. And yet, this was the game when you came back from 2-0 down at half-time, against the odds to win 3-2, and save yourselves with 5 minutes to go from relegation! Oh, did we? Oh, well, whatever. Point is, this is when I did a great deal flocking the Tom Chance Memorial stand to Phil Faluca, who built up those top-notch executive homes. They're still there now. Well, the ones that haven't collapsed, obviously. You still don't remember the game? They repeated on Match of the Day even now when they're talking about great comebacks. Phil Faluca's a hell of a negotiator. We're on our 3rd round of prawn sandwiches before we agreed the price. You sold the stand named after your childhood hero and turned part of your beloved stadium into homes for yuppies. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
Oh, yes. I should have asked for more for the land. It'd be worth a fortune now.
Scrooge, once you lose your club, you lose your soul. Remember that.
Lose my satsumas, more like. Come back here, you thieving paps, looking sheepskin coat wearing all git.
Scrooge found himself upon the floor. Slowly he reached out his hand and felt the softness of his Persian rug. Eyes open, he gazed upon his half-empty wine bottle and began to take issue with his senses.
Am I going mad?
Of course, and there is no finer state to be.
Scrooge looked up to find no image standing there, just where the Brilcreen destroyer had been before him. A bald man with sparkling eyes and a grin that would have the Cheshire Cat nodding with approval.
You, sir, are known to me.
See? My face is known throughout all of Italia. I am the Duce.
Of Mediaset and Milan.
See?
We've met at last year's Champions League final. But wait a minute. How can you be a ghost? You're not even dead.
I am the ghost of Transfer Windows Present. And I cannot be present if I'm not present.
You have lost me.
My dear boy, the Duce loses no one unless he wishes them to be lost. Now, take my hand. Come, I'm a busy man. There is a certain Ukrainian whose pants I wish to soil before the night is out. Oh, yes. Now, hold on tight. The TV is about to bend to my mighty will. Obey, my devils, obey!
Where are we?
Do you not recognize the home of your nephew?
Fred? I don't visit him that much. I'm not one for families.
A fatal mistake. For me, I keep Veronica and my tiny little Duchess close. They're his people. And Shepard. Except Shepard was bad, so I took a sink plunger to... No, forgive me. But you see what your neglect has done. Look at this place.
He must have spent a fortune.
He did. Your fortune.
Well, he lives better than I do.
Because you allow him. How much money did you give him today?
8 million.
Sterling, are you mad?
He said he needed it for a top player from the Congo.
The Congo? Not that boy from Belgium.
Yes.
You idiot. He couldn't slap a cow's ass with a banjo. He is worth 2 million.
2 million?
Euros.
Euros? But where's the rest of the money?
Let me ask you this. That elephant's head you see above the mantelpiece, how rare would you say it is?
Oh, extremely. Oh, why, just the other day I tried to...
Yes, you fool. I should throw you into my piranha pool for your idiocy.
Now there's no need for that.
Come, there is not much time.
Where are we going now?
Faces.
Faces?
Faces, you buffoon. This is a fashionable nightclub in swinging London. You like swinging?
No, why?
Just ask.
My God, what a racket!
I know. Fortunately, my ears are plugged with the wax of my enemies. Who do you see over there?
Well, that's Tim Tiny, my star man. What's he doing on the dance floor? He's supposed to be in Bert, seeing a specialist about his metatarsal.
His metatarsal is beyond him. He is lame.
But I've just extended his contract.
And there, who do you see there?
Well, that's my nephew, with Cratchit.
Sipping fine champagne and drinking a toast to the idiocy of Ebenezer Scrooge.
I'll kill them.
You can't.
Why not?
Because you are not here, Doozy.
I'm a fool.
Indeed. And I have seen many. I have vanquished many more. You must never allow your lackey to cream more money than you. I must away. Remember, always treat a football club as you would a lady's bottom. You must know when to caress it with a mink glove. And when to spank it with a spatula. Which reminds me, Veronica, where is my frying pan? I wish to flip myself.
And in a flash, they were back in Scrooge's apartment. Scrooge watched dumbstruck as the Duce merged into his television. His image faded away to leave that of a giant clock. Big Ben in London was striking midnight. Outside, the city was celebrating. Scrooge could make out the drunken strains of Auld Lang Syne above the police sirens and car alarms. And for a moment, Scrooge could have sworn he heard the sound of a rusty old door or window open. A cloaked figure stood over the cowering Scrooge.
Are you the spirit of Transfer Windows yet to come?
The spirit said nothing. It simply wafted its cold, pale hand, and the pair were transported to a TV studio in Isleworth.
Bob Cratchit, watching the game from Underhill. How are your former club getting on against Barnet?
It's going from bad to worse. 3-0 down, it's not even half time. What faint hope they've got of avoiding another relegation is disappearing.
That 10-point deduction was always going to be a mountain to climb. Where's it all gone
run for them.
Well, funny enough, that's the title of my new book. Your viewers can read all about it next week when it's serialised in the Sun.
I've got to interrupt you there, Bob. We've got a goal at Gig Lane. Which way's it gone, John Gwynne?
But Scrooge was not to discover if Barry had scored or conceded, as the scene melted away to be replaced by the elegant surroundings of one of London's most fashionable restaurants.
I've got the exclusive rights on the biggest stars at the club. You've got first dibs on whoever you want at a knockdown price. They'll even pay 25% of the wage for the extent of their current contracts. You can't lose.
Fred, you're a hell of a businessman. Your uncle could have learned a thing or two from you.
If he pulled me in, maybe they wouldn't have ended up what they have.
I'm just glad he's not alive to see it. God rest his soul.
Let's drink to the future, Fred.
To the future.
With the dawning realization of his sorry fate, Scrooge closed his eyes and softly wept. When he opened them again, he was outside, standing before a large billboard.
Coming soon. 75 luxury two-bedroom townhouses from 649999. Why are you showing me this?
The spirit raised its hand and pointed to the building behind the sign. Scrooge had enough time to read, "The Ebenezer Scrooge Memorial Football Academy," before the letters were shattered to the ground by a swinging wrecking ball.
No, my academy, my legacy, ruined. Show me no more, spirit. I've learned my lesson. I'll change.
Scrooge tugged at the spirit's cloak, tears streaming down his fake tan cheeks. Even in his distraught state, he was surprised to find the material soft and plush. Wiping his tears, he saw that he was holding the handmade curtains of his bedroom. Out of the window, the weak light of the winter sunrise crept above the city rooftops. Dawn had arrived, and Scrooge was glad to be alive.
Saints be praised, I'm not dead, and I'm a changed man. From now on, things will be different. I'm going to drop ticket prices, let kids in for free, cut back on the bonuses, trim the squad, play only the local lads in the reserve team, monthly meetings with the supporters trust. By the time I'm finished, Steve Gibson will have nothing on me.
It's still to come, Sky Sports News. David Beckham has announced he should be prepared to return to the Premier League should he receive an offer from the right club.
Hang on, though. Fred? What day is it today?
Why, it's transfer window opening day.
Oh, I didn't miss it, could I? Have you still got Simon Fuller's telephone number? We'll start negotiations with £8 million a year, 10% profit share and full image rights. I'm going to make you earn that £3 million arrangement fee, Fred.
And so Ebenezer had learned nothing. And within 5 years, his club was losing to Hereford in the first round of the Cup. David had long since gone. Merry Christmas, everyone.
The Onionbag Christmas Carol was loosely based on the story and characters created by Charles Dickens. It was written and performed by Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley.